From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Mission District.
Fremont.
El Cerrito.
O-Town, baby.
Lake Merritt.
Temescal.
Tenderloin.
Treasure Island.
Richmond, California.
Coming up, we'll drop in on a lottery that determines who gets affordable housing in San Francisco.
I've been trying for 3 years now. And this is the first time they've had a lottery of this size.
Then we'll check out the other options for people on the housing hunt.
Frankly, it's demoralizing at times out there on the market because it's tough. It's tough to find a unit.
And we'll hear the story of a wedding singer recovering from a stroke.
And I used to make fun of people that did that, but turned out being one of the funnest things I've ever done.
The road to recovery and the road home today on Cross Currents. Stay with us. San Francisco has an affordability problem. According to federal standards, people should spend no more than 30% of their income on housing. But a 2015 report by the real estate database Zillow found most renters in San Francisco spend about half their paycheck on rent. There are some options out there for people priced out of the rental market, federally subsidized programs, Section 8, and public housing. And then there are the city's below market rent and low income housing programs. They offer reduced rent to people who make a certain percentage of the area's median income. In San Francisco, that's about $72,000 a year for an individual. But securing one of these affordable units is a competitive process, and it's one that ultimately comes down to chance. KALW's Audrey Dilling has more.
About 100 people are seated in the auditorium in the basement of the San Francisco Main Library. They're waiting for an affordable housing lottery to begin. The people here are just a fraction of those trying to get an affordable apartment today.
So you don't have to be here for the lottery. You can leave at any time.
Up on the stage, Brooke Barber from the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development stands behind a clear plastic box with a handle on it, kind of like what you'd use to play bingo.
As you see, this is a see-through box, okay? That means everybody gets to see.
The box is full of white slips of paper with numbers printed on them. There are about 2,500, each representing a person trying to find an affordable place to live in San Francisco.
Other than that, good luck and happy holidays. We're getting ready to get started.
91 affordable units are up for grabs today, a mix of studios and one and two bedrooms. They're part of the city's below market rent program, where for-profit developers set aside some lower rent units in an otherwise market rate building. To qualify for one of these, a household can make up to 55% of San Francisco's area median income. That's about $37,000 a year for an individual. They also have to pass a credit check and have a clean housing record, no evictions for cause in the past 7 years. And then, certain people get their numbers thrown in the box first.
So we're going to start with certificate of preference holders first.
The first order of preference goes to people displaced from the Western Addition or Bayview Hunters Point in the 60s and 70s, when almost 6,000 people were forced to leave their homes for redevelopment. Some of them are still looking for an affordable place to live.
We have 10 folks who apply to that preference. Then we have the second preference is Ellis Act Housing Preference.
The last preference goes to people who already live or work in San Francisco.
Oh yeah, one more thing, you guys. When I get to the live work, there's a lot of tickets. So I'm not gonna turn this every 2 to 3 tickets that I pull. I will turn them at least once every 10 tickets and then I will turn the box.
There's so many tickets, she's gotta regulate how much she turns the box. And then with little ceremony, it begins.
696-0458. 696-0498 is lottery winner number one.
A lone woman toward the back of the room, Niambi Campbell, cheers and claps. Some people turn around in their seats and flash a quick smile. Campbell hops up and runs out into the hallway to make a phone call.
Hello? Mama? Come get me. I was the first one they pick. I got it. Okay, I'll see you outside. Okay, bye.
Campbell's parents were a part of the group displaced from Hunters Point. They ended up finding a new house where she's been living. But the lottery special preference program also applies to children of the displaced. So now Campbell has a shot at getting her own place in San Francisco.
So this is home, and it's where I need to be. Job, schools, this is where I should be.
And is this your first lottery?
This is my very first lottery. I don't believe in this, but now I'm a believer.
25-696-1240.
Back in the auditorium, the lottery proceeds at a hypnotic pace.
58-696-1239-696-1239.
A woman pats a fussy baby on the back. A man takes his toddler daughter for a walk up and down the aisle. People shift in their seats. It's staggeringly tedious.
72-696-0091.
And yet, each seven-digit number wields tremendous power.
91.
Even though there are only 91 apartments available, they'll call 1,000 numbers today. That's in case people at the top of the list don't actually qualify for some reason. So even though Shawana Smith just got picked 107th, she still feels pretty good.
My number was 696-1324, and I'm extremely happy right now.
Smith is here with her baby girl.
You gonna say hi? Say yay!
Right now, they're both living with Smith's fiance in Fairfield, almost 50 miles from his job in San Francisco. They've been trying to move to the city.
And it's really out of our price range. Like a studio right now is like $1,300, and we don't have $1,300 to spend on rent.
A studio in the lottery building goes for just under $1,000.
$498.
As the lottery creeps further into the hundreds, Shawana Smith seems like the last person in a good mood. Ty Edwards paces the back of the auditorium, rustling a brochure about the apartment building between his fingers.
I've been trying for 3 years now, and this is the first time they've had a lottery of this size. So I'm just hoping that my number gets called this time at least.
Do you live in San Francisco right now?
Yes, I do. I stay in a homeless shelter.
Where were you before that?
I was working for the city, actually, and, you know, layoffs and things like that, and lost my job, and that's about it. I'm just a veteran that's down on his luck, that's all.
Nearby, Gloria Mendoza is losing her patience. She had to step out, and now she doesn't know if her number's been called.
I know the guy right here in the front said that they don't go backwards on the number, so I'm not sure. Maybe she can, I don't know. So I started writing the numbers down for a little while I was here. And then I stopped. I had to go move my daughter's car. So I'm still like backed up now.
Mendoza says she often sleeps in that car or at her daughter's apartment in the Tenderloin, but she's only allowed 9 overnight guests a month. Mendoza lost her Section 8 apartment in September. Her landlord decided to stop accepting vouchers for the federal subsidized rent program. It's voluntary.
She didn't want to participate in the program anymore. She was a very, very nice landlady. And I've never had an issue with, like, paying rent or anything. It just so what happened to me. You know, it could happen to anyone.
Mendoza can keep looking for landlords that'll accept her voucher. In that way, she's lucky. The wait list for Section 8 in San Francisco is closed. So is the one for San Francisco Public Housing, a separate federally funded program for low-income families. There's just too much demand and not enough supply.
498.
And you could say the same thing for all housing in San Francisco.
500-696-0912-696.
Last year, about 370 affordable units came available through the lottery program. That's not even enough to house all the people who applied for today's lottery. Mayor Ed Lee has pledged to create or rehabilitate a total of 30,000 new housing units, with a third of those designated affordable by the year 2020. But for people like Ty Edwards, that's not nearly soon enough.
So I have to come back to see if my number comes up in the second half here. I'll be back in just a few minutes. Hopefully it's good.
Edwards' number didn't end up getting called. Those that did get picked still aren't home free. Now they have to make it through the interview process.
That was reporter Audrey Dilling, and she joins us now to tell us more. Okay, Audrey, I have a lot of follow-up questions to that story. First of all, what happens to all the people who don't get picked in that lottery? What other options are there for them?
Right. Well, there are several lotteries a year, so they can keep applying to the lottery. That particular one that we just heard about was for 91 units. That's a lot more than average. Usually it's like 30 to 40 units coming up But as you heard, the demand way exceeds the supply. So some people aren't going to get a unit. Some people aren't going to get one of these rental units. The city has other affordable housing program out there for people who are trying to buy a home. So if you're making up to, on the higher income spectrum of what they'll help, up to 120% of the area median income for one person, that's about $80,000 a year. Mm-hmm. You can get some assistance in buying a home.
Okay. So someone can be making as much as $80,000 a year and still qualify for housing assistance. To a lot of people, that sounds like a lot of money.
Yeah. Critics of San Francisco's affordable housing policy say that having that kind of income limit really doesn't do much to help San Francisco's really vulnerable populations, people making way less than that. But Maria Benjamin from the San Francisco Office of Housing and Community Development, she says it's just a sign of how expensive San Francisco is that we're helping people up to this income level because housing is just too expensive. I talked to her and here's what she had to say about that.
So we are trying to serve everybody from homeless folks to people who make, you know, households of four who make over $100,000. Even if you make $120,000, you can't afford a $1 million house. And so if we're going to have our working families stay in the city, if we're going to be able to have our teachers and our muni bus drivers and our service providers stay here, we have to be able to provide housing on a long spectrum.
Okay, so what about people who are on that lower end of the spectrum?
Well, there's other programs out there. There's San Francisco Public Housing. Those are the low-income specific rental units around San Francisco that are in a specific building. There's also the Section 8 Housing Voucher Program, which is actually called the Housing Choice Voucher Program now. That's where the government pays a certain amount to help somebody pay their rent, and they just go out and they look for a regular unit like anybody else. Okay. And the people using those programs are making about $11,000 to $18,000 a year. So that's for the much lower income makers in the city. But the wait lists for both of those programs right now are closed. They recently opened up the public housing wait list just because there was so much demand there. They opened it up for just homeless families could apply and get on that list. And 10,000 names are on that list right now. They haven't confirmed that all of those people are homeless, but in just a couple weeks, 10,000 people signed up. But basically, it's tough to get into public housing right now. The Section 8 wait list has about 2,000 names on it and it's also closed. They're only allowed to put as many vouchers out there as they can actually fund and subsidize that rent.
And so then if you're lucky and you have a voucher, how hard is it to actually then get a place?
I talked to Darius Cahan. He's deputy executive director of the San Francisco Housing Authority, and they oversee both of those programs. He said about 60% of voucher holders find an apartment. So they have about 30 days to go out and find a landlord that'll take their voucher. They go out apartment hunting just like anybody else. Here's what he had to say.
And so what they do is they then pound the pavement. They're out there sort of, you know, using a lot of the same lists that other people are using, interviewing with landlords, that kind of thing. And, you know, frankly, it's demoralizing at times out there on the market because it's tough. It's tough to find a unit.
So then what happens if they don't find something?
Well, if they don't find something in 30 days, they can extend it for another 30 days and then another 30 days. But if not, if they don't find it in that 90 days, their voucher gets passed to the next person on the list.
90 days.
90 days. So they have 90 days to find a unit competing with everybody else in the San Francisco housing market, essentially, who's looking for something to rent.
All right. So then let's go back to the woman in the story who qualified for a special housing preference. Her parents were displaced by redevelopment in the 1960s. That seems like a really, really long time ago. Are those people really still looking for housing?
Yeah, that kind of shocked me when I first sat down and that was what they were talking about at the lottery was just seems like it was about 50 or 60 years ago that these people were displaced. So Maria Benjamin from the Mayor's Office of Housing and Community Development says that there's about 800 active families still taking advantage of this program. That includes people who are housed and also looking for housing. So they're still out there. The state law required when they got displaced from those neighborhoods that they have some kind of preference in housing programs moving forward. That preference is going to expire in 2021. So eventually we will no longer have that preference in the lottery. The state law also required that people getting displaced get some kind of financial assistance. But for the people who were renting, they got just about a check for something like $2,000. Mm. People who got displaced from homes that they owned, they got the full market value for their house. But even back then, San Francisco was more expensive than everywhere else in the Bay Area. So
Benjamin says that the families that she's talking to, their lives were never the same. Here's what she had to say.
I talked to families from that were relocated during that time, and many of them, even though they moved, they came back every Sunday to go to church because this is where their community is. So the disruption of their lives in the 60s and 70s with the redevelopment agency's redevelopment plans was significant.
So you mentioned the mayor's push to create 10,000 affordable housing units by the year 2020. How is he going to do that?
Right. So people might remember that in the last election, there were a lot of housing-related propositions on the ballot. Two of them were passed having to do with affordable housing. Prop A was an affordable housing bond that was going to put $310 million towards the development of affordable housing. Another one, Prop D, authorized the building of around 1,500 units, with a third of those going to be permanently affordable. There's also something coming down right now, the Affordable Housing Bonus Plan, which was put forth by Mayor Ed Lee and Supervisor Katie Tang. That would allow developers to build two levels higher than what zoning allows, if a third of those units are affordable in that building that they build. So the plan calls for some of those units to just go up on vacant land where there aren't any buildings. But they've also identified some properties that would be torn down and replaced by these buildings that do contain 30% affordable housing, but might go in place of something that's already rent controlled. So people are saying that this is actually removing some affordable units from the city and maybe not replacing it with all that much more. And some are even going as far as to call it redevelopment under another name. So kind of like what happened to the people in the Western Addition and Baby Hunters Point in the 60s and 70s. I'm actually going to be talking to Deepa Varma, the new executive director of the San Francisco Tenants Union, about that. I talked to her this week, and we'll hear that next week on Cross Currents on Tuesday.
All right, we'll be listening. Thanks, Audrey.
Thanks, Hannah.
You can hear more of Audrey Dilling's reporting at KALW.org. Click Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. San Francisco's Laguna Honda Hospital began its life in 1866 as an almshouse for the ill and impoverished. It's now a center for skilled nursing and rehabilitation with over 750 residents. They're there for many reasons: profound disability, recovery from physical or mental illness and injury, or significant caregiving needs. Some are there for temporary rehabilitation, and some move in for longer periods of time. One of those residents is Raymond Ruiz, a musician living on the fifth floor, whose story we're going to hear today. You'll hear the background noise of a busy hospital.
My name's Raymond Ruiz, R-U-I-Z, in February of 2014, the day before Valentine's Day, I suffered a massive stroke. And ever since then, I've been at Lagoon. I think they first took me to General, and then from there, they kind of like moved me around between General, UC on Parnassus, and here.
You're kind of a young guy to have a stroke,
yeah,
I think.
I'm only 46. I keep getting reminded how young I am by everybody else.
So that must have been a shock for you.
Heck yeah. Yeah.
Where were you when it happened?
I guess in my room. I don't remember it happening. I just remember the after it happening.
Were you in San Francisco?
Yeah, I live in the Mission on 24th and York.
Are you, so you were in the music business, or you played music as a hobby?
Yeah.
What kind of music?
Rock and roll.
Do you know why? Did they tell you why you had a stroke, or was it just they don't know?
I think some kind of clot moved to my brain, and then blam, started to shut everything else down.
You were healthy, though, before that happened.
Yeah, for the most part healthy, yeah. I was walking around, living a good life, and a little too good.
Yeah, what do you mean by that?
Just doing whatever I felt like. I think it was more of a bad diet because I also had congestive heart failure. It was like a very high sodium diet and lifestyle. And so I started collecting water near my lungs and my heart. And that's not good.
So after being here for 14 or 15 months, how do you find it?
You know, I have no complaints. I'm spoiled here, man. They take care of me every day.
Maybe you could talk a little bit about before you came here with me, like what were some, you know, significant moments of your life before you came to Laguna Honda, some important things.
Well, I'm a musician, and for a bunch of years before my stroke, I had been playing in a cover band, doing weddings and like corporate parties, and I used to make fun of people that did that, but turned out being one of the funnest things I've ever done.
Well, I hear the train a-coming, he's rolling around the bend. I ain't seen the sunshine since I don't know when I'm stuck.
How many people were in the band?
All together, there's 7. That's a lot of people to pay.
What did you play?
I played bass guitar, and the band altogether, like I said, it's a cover band, so we'll do 50s and 60s, you know, oldies, you know, Beatles and Johnny B. Goode and, you know, stuff like that, and then 70s, like classic rock, and 80s dance, up to contemporary top 40.
So when did you start playing the bass?
I would have to say it was around 1990 or 91.
What was the name of your band?
The last one was called Wifey.
Wifey?
Yes. And before that, I was in a local punk rock band called the Sister Kissers.
I love that name.
Me too.
So do you have other family here in San Francisco?
Just really close friends. I don't have blood family in San Francisco.
It's family.
I mean, we've bloodied each other off a few times, you know, but...
So are you still getting your rehab here, Raymond?
Yes.
How's that going?
Slow, but I think I'm improving. I feel like I am, and people say I look better. People say I'm doing stuff better. So everything's going well.
Well, you're young enough to, you know...
Bounce back, yeah.
So besides your rehab, what other kind of activities do you participate in here?
They have a painting studio. I could go down and spend a couple hours painting.
Well, you're fortunate because you have a talent for creativity with your music and these other things. It's really important that you can express that here.
You know, you're right. You're absolutely right. I spend a lot of time thinking, and when I can't, when it starts getting boggling, like I'm thinking too much, then I just try to think of old songs that I used to know, and I try to just think of the lyrics, and, you know, that becomes a task, and that becomes my goal for the night.
So what's a song lyric that you were recently thinking about?
It goes... There once was a little Indian brave who, before he was 10, played war games in the woods with his Indian friends. He built a big dream that when he grew up, he'd be a fearless warrior Indian chief. Many moons passed, and the dream grew strong. Till tomorrow, he would fight his first battle and sing his first war song, but something went wrong. Surprise attack killed him in his sleep that night. And so castles made of sand melt into the sea eventually. Do you remember a guy named Jimi Hendrix?
Completely. I remember that song very, very well.
Oh, yeah? I'm happy. Brother Indian brave, who before he was 10, played war games in the woods with his Indian friends. And he built a dream that when he grew up, he would be a fearless warrior.
That's Raymond Ruiz. His story was recorded by Marcy Fraser and engineered by Colin Peden. He would sing his first war song and fight his first battle, but something went wrong. Surprise attack killed him in his sleep that night. And so castles made of sand melts into the sea. And if you've got an incredible story you'd like to share, we want to hear it. Our email is news@kalw.org, or leave a message on our feedback line. The number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. Because of you, we can proudly say we're listener-supported public radio. Our team includes Luisa Cardoza, Leela Day, Audrey Dilling, Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Casey Miner, Ted Muldoon, James Rowland, Stephen Short, and Eli Wertschafter. Today's show was engineered by Chris Hoff. The line producer was Liza Veal. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Managing producer is Julie Kane. Ben Trefney is our news director. Our theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. Today's local music is by the Berkeley Choro Ensemble. Choro is a type of Brazilian music dating from the 1800s. The ensemble will be performing on Sunday at the Old St. Hilary's Church in Tiburon. Music starts at 4 in the afternoon. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.